Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Kim Clijsters, yeah, she was my idol. Like, I wanted to be like...
But she was a hardcore player, wasn't she?
Yeah, so was I.
Yeah.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The League of Ireland pod.
On Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the refreshingly alcohol-free Rockshore 00.
Get the facts, be drink aware. Visit drinkaware.ie.
You are very welcome to this week's League of Ireland pod on Off the Ball. It is Stephen Doyle with you again this week. And as ever, I am joined by Vinnie Perth and Gareth McGlynn. How are we doing, lads?
What's a crack, birthday boy?
I'm not going to milk this one. Wasn't that special? Listen, the League of Ireland pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Rockshore 00. Refreshingly alcohol-free. Always be drink aware. Get the facts and visit drinkaware.ie. Now, no live game on Off the Ball this weekend because the teams are turning their attentions to the FAI Cup, which we will talk about towards the end of this week's pod. But for last weekend, the two Jimmies helping Bows batter the Tribesmen. Waterford took the bragging rights in the Munster Derby, giving angry City supporters the blues, and the bitter red give the Candy Stripes a bit of a come down. Bows back up to second place in the Premier Division table. Derry City third. Waterford overtake Galway United into seventh position. And Sligo Rovers are now eight clear of Cork City and just six behind their Connacht rivals. But before we discuss league matters, gentlemen, let's quickly touch on the European stuff. We won't spend too long in Shelburne because we're recording here on Wednesday afternoon. The game is Wednesday evening, so it could be done and dusted by the time many of our listeners get to hear the podcast. But look, quickly, I was there at Talca Park, Vinnie, last week. Shelburne, 1-0 win against Linfield. Was it a disappointing result?
I tell you, we'll know tonight. That's the best way to put it. European football is so strange that I've never, ever been involved in any game where the team we played against weren't different in the second leg, whether that's home or away. And generally, if the second leg is away, they perform to a much higher standard. So we know it's Linfield, we know all about them. They've got players to come back in. It feels like Shells are in the driving seat, but they've a hell of a lot of work to do tonight. We all obviously wish them all the best, and I think it's important for them that they get over the line. Well, I think it's going to be a really difficult tie up there tonight. And people are making this assumption that the big pitch would suit Shells. Not so sure. I think the home surroundings are just huge in Europe for whatever reason. So a little bit of fear for Shelburne tonight. Hopefully I'm proved wrong.
Gareth, when I was watching the game, I could see that Shelburne had the better players. They were much fitter. And I thought that Sean Boyd, maybe a more ruthless or more experienced manager, might have brought him on at half time, because you could see that Odebeko really wasn't getting any joy in a very crowded Linfield box. I thought David Healy showed his experience as a manager, maybe outmanaged Joey O'Brien, you could say, to a certain extent. That's not to disrespect Joey O'Brien. He's a brilliant coach and all that. But to be fair, he is new in the game and this is his first ever European tie. So with all that in mind, I just felt a 1-0 win was a little bit disappointing from a Shelburne point of view because it could come back to bite them tonight.
Yeah, I'm worried for them. I thought Shells would have won this tie fairly comfortably. I'm worried about them now. I think the first 35 minutes you saw how good Shelburne were. I think you're going to see the first 35 minutes in Linfield's ground, how good they are. And can they take maybe one or two opportunities that Shelburne didn't take? Remember the Caffrey header off the post from the set piece and then that header chance as well. Linfield are going to get them chances in the first 30, 35 minutes. If Shelburne hold out and it's 1-0 overall or 0-0 on the night, then I think they'll be fine. They'll go through it. But you're right. But again, Joe O'Brien will have learned a lot from that first match. I mean, not having seen Linfield, not really understand the players, he will get a real feel now for where the danger is going to come, where they're strong and where they're weak. There's no doubt about it. David Healy did a job on them and he will be absolutely buzzing. As the second, or I think it may be just the third competitive game of the season, they were able to hold Shells to a 1-0 away from home. He'll be buzzing. The players will be buzzing. Chris Shields will be a massive, massive boost for them. Trust me, I talked about the striker, Cooper. Losing him was a massive blow. Having Chris Shields back in that team in the middle of the park, all his experience, will be a big boost That's the reason that I think this could be a little bit tricky. They really should have been out of sight.
Vinny, at one point in the game, I noticed Harry Wood, you know, almost jogging back a few yards and shouting at Mark Coyle because he felt the defenders had to squeeze up. And I noticed that myself, you know, they weren't playing really well as a unit. There was a big gap between Odebeko and Boyd in that second half and the defence in the midfield. And Boyd was almost shouting back at his own captain saying, you guys have to squeeze up here. Did you notice anything like that in the game that might have been, I suppose it was just that the ball had further to travel because there was a bigger gap between the defence and the midfield and the centre forwards?
Yes and no. The answer to that is very simple. Like, I get your point about Boyd coming on and making a big difference. But when by going 4-4-2, it then allowed bigger spaces for Linfield to occupy. Made it a little bit easier for them once they dealt with the two up front, obviously. And Shells lost a little bit of the sort of control they had of the game. Now, I take your point. The problem was when they got to the final third, but Odebeko was a little bit isolated, or he was in a crowded penalty box. But by bringing Boyd on, yes, in one sense, they were more of a threat, but they didn't have the same control of the ball as they did previously that, because they had more people around the midfield area. So that's the dilemma for Joey O'Brien, in the sense of I don't expect him to go with two up front. I would say, don't be shocked if this is a nil all at half-time and Shells have had loads of the ball. Linfield don't need to go out and win this tie in the first 10, 15, 20 minutes. They're very experienced in European football. They've had a lot of over the number of years, so with Healy. And these second legs are interesting, as I said, away from home. And I feel like it would help, but I feel like a goal for Shells in the fourth half would be massive for them. Because nil out of halftime, you're sort of saying that's when Linfield will have to open up. Yes, that will leave in behind them. So there's a whole lot of things going on there, Steve. So I know the game is taking place a couple of hours, so we'll skip by it. Just to say to you, you lose control by having two up front. That's why so many long people have gone away from it.
And just quickly, finally, Gareth, something Vinny touched on about David Healy's experience. Like in the end, he essentially was playing a 5-2-3. He had three forwards because he kind of felt maybe he could sniff a goal the way his team were going. So it showed a great bravery, it showed a great confidence in his own abilities as a manager. And if it comes down to a Healy v O'Brien thing and tactical changes, or you know, you'd kind of have to favour Healy in the tie.
You would, just from European experience and management experience, but Joey O'Brien's been about as well. I mean, as a player, as a coach with Shamrock Rovers and now with Shelburne. So I don't think it's that massive a gap, but those are the things that as fans we absolutely love. We love the chess game and players' formations, movements. And that's why managers have got to be on it all the time. They've got to be alert and I think, honestly, David Healy's going to go for the juggler in the first 25, 30 minutes, because I think the longer the game goes on, the fitter Shell will be, the fitness will tell. So I think they need to get a goal in the first half an hour. I think you're going to see a similar start to how Shell started in the first leg. They're going to really go for the juggler, try and get the goal and then maybe consolidate a bit, because when Shells can change four or five players in the second half or make substitutes, they can bring in fit, fresh legs. And I think by that stage, Linfield could be out of gas just because of the amount of games that they played. But the tactical battle is something that's going to be brilliant. And listen, Joey will learn from this tonight, no matter how it goes, and he will have learned from the first match. So this is all positives. But again, they've got some European experience in that as well. We mentioned Gannon. There's some players in there that have played in Europe as well. So they'll have to step up to the plate and use their experience as well, depending on how the game goes, and manage it on the pitch.
Yeah, Ali Coote as well, obviously, with bags of European experience. Well, listen, hopefully it goes well for Shelburne from a league perspective. Hopefully both teams do well this week. The other team, St. Patrick's Athletic, Vinny, just looking at their last eight matches, they've scored just one goal from play. How concerning is that going into this match against Hegelmann in Lithuania?
Very concerning. I said last week I feared for Pats, I think, in the sense of they're not scoring enough goals. And I thought this, because this team they're playing from Liechtenstein or from, Lithuania are still in season or in their mid-season. We lost that sort of summer league advantage. So it's a difficult tie for them. As I said, the second leg, hugely different. You're probably looking at these players, they had a feel for them, they felt probably felt Pats were the better side. When you watch the game, created an awful lot of chances, didn't finish them ultimately, and that seems to be a bit of a problem at the moment. So fourth goal, captain obvious here, but fourth goal in that tie is hugely important. But both Irish sides have a lot of work to do, albeit 1-0 up going into those second legs. Probably would like a little bit more breathing room, and I'd probably have more fear for Pats this week than I would for Shelbourne. I'll put you that way. I expect Shell's just about to get over the line. Pats, well, I'm not so sure. I hope I'm wrong, but we'd love to see it come true. But really difficult for Pats. Haven't put that team away, and he had the opportunity to do that.
It would probably go against everything in Stephen Kenny's mindset, Gareth. But tactically, going to this game or going into this away match, are they better going with some pace on the wings and up front, trying to defend deep and try and hit this team on the counter attack?
Yeah, I think this is set up for a Stephen Kenny masterclass. I honestly think with the pace, and now haven't seen the team that they're facing, the Lithuanian side in the first leg, I think he's going to go for the juggler. Not completely, but just have the pace ready to rock and roll. I can see Pat's winning this game. Listen, we hope both teams won, with both Shells and Pats go through, but I think with the pace, Elbazetti, Mulroney, and especially Power, I think Power's coming into a wee bit of form. This loud goal against Bowes, against Derry the week before that, I thought he was absolutely exceptional, just mistimed the runs, but he was a real threat every time they got the ball.
Great goal, in fact, that goal from play was his goal against Galway United as well. It's a really good goal.
Yeah, exactly. I think he's coming under the fore. I think he's bided a time. Stephen's very good at that. When he makes a new signing, he lets the other players play until there's an opportunity. And then once they go on and they're ready, he puts them in there. But I think, if you look at their players, the style, the technical ability within Pats, I think they're suited to European football. I think we saw that last year when they went through a few rounds. And I think this year will be the same. So I expect them to go through.
Yeah, and Vinny, just to finish looking, you've coached European football with Dundalk as an assistant and as a manager. You need big games from the likes of a Barry Bagley. Barry Bagley's been in good form. I thought he was good against Bohemians, played really well last week as well. So the likes of him and Jamie Lennon, they really need to be switched on tonight, ready to, I suppose, put out any fires that might, I suppose, come up in front of them Thursday night.
Yeah, I think it's important to say that players go up levels for European football. So does the opposition, but there's no doubt you need some standout performances. I remember, like, you go back to our amazing run in 16 when David McMillan hit form I don't mean out of nowhere, but all of a sudden you just couldn't stop scoring in European football, and went on that brilliant run over in Iceland. It all started from against FH Havnanor, I think it was, but he just went on a great goal scoring run. And a player in form over this next month or two can make a huge impact to the European runs for these teams. So really important that the top players, someone like Chris Forrester, he hasn't really started coming back from injury, but someone like Chris Forrester gets his opportunity, he could be the difference for them on the likes of Thursday night. So big performance is needed, but also no matter who you play, particularly the Irish sides, defensively you've got to be sound. So there has been some questions about Pats defensively. I think over the sort of last few months, they've coughed up a few goals that isn't like them. So they've got to have that right on Thursday night to go through.
Yeah. Well, listen, hopefully it goes well for St. Pat's in Lithuania and tonight for Shelbourne up in Belfast. Coming back to League of Ireland matters, lads. I suppose, look, with a sort of a look ahead to the games, which are on Friday week, and again, it will be the six clubs who aren't involved in European action. We've got Galway United at home to Waterford. There was one thing I saw during the game against Bohemians, Gareth, when Galway United were at Daly Mount Park, and Bobby Burns ran about 20 or 30 yards up the left wing and absolutely tore strips off Malcolm Shaw. He was giving them lackery, like it was just unbelievable. And I even said it to John Caulfield in the interview after the game. Like, Shaw, I didn't think was playing too badly, but he maybe wasn't making the right kind of runs that they needed. Is this the kind of thing you want to see from your players, especially when your team is struggling? Like, they are starting to hover very dangerously above those two relegation places, and Sligo Rovers are making ground.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I mean, funny, I'll tell you as a manager, but see, as a player, I loved either giving a bollocking or receiving a bollocking. It just sharps you up. The problem is Bobby Burns need to realise that Shaw is not Moses Dyer. We're talking about Moses Dyer's assists and his goals. Trust me, when you see Moses Dyer at his peak, he occupies... I remember watching him against Drogheda and against Derry, week back to back, and he occupied three centre halves on his own. He battered them, he ran them behind, he took it short, and Shaw is just not that type of player. He's not a bad player, but he's just not at the peak of his powers at the minute. So I think there's a bit of frustration there that Bobby Burns, well, he lifted his head and Shaw wasn't making the right run or the run that Moses Dyer used to make. So there's going to be a little bit about that, but that's healthy. And I bet you John Caulfield and Ollie Horgan absolutely love that as well. I think the one thing as well that they missed the other night was Hickey. Hickey is massive to him. I mean, physically, presence. And people say that Hickey's all he is flick-ons and heads and gets around the pitch. Technically, he's quite good as well. His timing of the run getting under the box. So they missed that as well. So there was obviously a little bit of frustration maybe from the players at the back trying to get it up to either Hickey or Moses, what it used to be. So I'm all for it. Keep doing it. And it's great because he's only in the club. Bobby Burns in the club there, he must be only in since the start of the season. Now he feels comfortable enough to set standards and kind of get his personality and his character across to the rest of the players. I love it.
Might be a team in that stable as the show develops. We chat about some other stuff, maybe Cork related later on, but there's nothing wrong with a little bit of old school as well. You know, it's okay. And when you're a player on the receiving end of it, by and large, my experience, most players take it when, you know, they might answer back or throw the odd expletive back, but deep down, you know as a player. So there's not a lot wrong with it. I mean, Shaw's not there yet from a fitness point of view. You obviously were at the game live. I've been impressed with him. I think he needs to get fitter and up to match speed, but he's someone who's developing nicely for them, albeit they're struggling at the moment in terms of the results. There's a balance with all of that stuff. You don't want to cross the line and go too far where players are almost coaching on the pitch with. But the odds kick up the backside, never done anyone any harm. No matter when it comes to the modern day player, people think you can't do it anymore. You can.
Yeah, and Steve-O and Vinny will kind of agree with me here. He may agree with me. It tells you more about Shaw than it does Bobby Burns, and it will tell you more about Shaw in the next 2 or 3 weeks because you really don't know what a player's made of until his back's to the wall and his players or his manager is questioning him or holding him accountable. Now you'll see Shaw for the next 2 or 3 weeks whether he's going to be a Galway player, a League Ireland player, where his levels are.
Yeah, what would Shaw like Steve alive? Don't mind me asking.
Like I think he's one of those, like he's obviously quite big, he's very physical, he's the kind of centre forward. He kind of almost remind me nearly of Gennaro Daniels with Cork City. Like he's able to occupy a centre back, and you know, I think they just need somebody a little bit nippier, a little bit quicker around them. Like Stephen Walsh has been a brilliant servant for Galway United, but I just wonder, are the two of them too similar to be playing up front together? I'm almost thinking, could you stick Ed McCarthy in beside Shaw there? Because I know Ed McCarthy's been playing on the wings. He's one of those players that he could probably play anywhere, and he kind of looks like a kind of player that might do well off second balls off a big centre forward like Malcolm Shaw, who has had a decent record in the past. And look, John Caulfield even said it to me after the game that a couple of the players that he brought in have obviously been on a different timeline with regard to their seasons. So they're just not up to that fitness level yet as the rest of the team. So that is hampering them a bit.
And Hickey, imagine when Hickey's put up there along with Shaw and he can take people away and let Shaw run behind. I mean, you know what it's like. If you're up there on your own against 4 or 5 defenders and you've got a wee Ed McCarthy helping you out, I mean, that's all well and good if you're a technical team. But when you're trying to get it from front to back pretty quickly and get in these zones to get it up to him, imagine when Hickey's beside him. Imagine the handful them two will be for 3-4 defenders.
100%. Vinny, Aaron Bulger is an interesting one as well, and one of those players who just hasn't hit the fitness levels that they require of him yet. Obviously has been at Longford Town, Shamrock Rovers 2, Cork City, Shamrock Rovers and Shamrock Rovers 2 he played for, went off to play for Ebbsfleet, back now at Galway United. Showed flashes, I thought, against Bohemians. You know, what do you think Galway United fans can expect from him over the next few months?
I think when you have a team like Galway, there's this perception that like the ball long, everything is a long throw in, all of them things. And they do that stuff, and they do that very well. But sometimes you need a player, almost a little contrast to that. So when it's not working that way, or a team have cottoned on to you in the middle of a game where, for example, Shaw's just being bullied by centre-half, someone like Aaron can come in and do a couple of things differently. And I think that's it's a decent sign to have somebody that's not like, you don't want 11 or 12 or 13 of the exact same players playing the same way, with the same mindset. Something from Aaron, I think he can do, unfortunately for him, I think there's a very talented player, but hasn't been able to find the level of consistency to keep him at them clubs and keep him in the teams at them clubs. But I think he could be almost, I won't say maverick-like, but you know, always come onto a pitch and try something a little bit different. So if you imagine playing against Galway and it's long ball, long ball, long ball, long throw in, and you're deal when all of a sudden a fella like Aaron comes on, just steps inside and whips a ball into the back post with pace or quality or slides one down the side for Shaw, then you've got a different problem. And you'd almost forget, oh, I have to win me headers. So it's little challenges like that, John, is at the crate. By bringing in somebody like Aaron, that's a little bit different. But I think this is one of them moments where I think a lot of us a few years ago had high hope to Aaron Bulger. I hope this is an opportunity in a club for him to seize it and sort of kick on in his career. Because it'd be good to see him bouncing back, having a good sort of, whatever happens, finish the season well, and then start next season with a good pre-season under his belt. And it'd be something a little bit different for Galway as they evolve and don't play the same way all the time.
And generally, lads, are we concerned at all for Galway? I was just trying to pull up the form table here now. Last five matches, they're eighth position, which is, I suppose, what they are overall now in the standings. Are we concerned at all, Gareth, for Galway United getting sucked into that bottom two battle?
Nah, not at all. Galway United are a solid team with good players. I don't see them getting sucked into that at all. In fact, I can see them climbing a wee bit before the end of the season. And Aaron Bulger is a perfect example of that. When he integrates properly into Galway, they get Hickey and they get Shaw properly. They're just in that transition period at the minute where they've got too many players that are either coming or going or just into the team. There's no consistency, and it was the same in the defence, and that's why they're giving away non-Galway-like goals. They're just being sloppy at the minute. I don't see Galway finishing anywhere near the bottom two. I think they'll pull away.
I'd be concerned, Gareth. I'd be concerned. 6 points.
Why
6 points clear of Sligo. Sligo, everything has gone well. The recruitment has been really good. They brought in League of Ireland players who have all hit the ground running, more or less. There's a feel-good factor there. But Galway's results of lately, you need to stop that. Stop that quickly. While I don't think, if I had to put the mortgage on it, I wouldn't predict Galway being second from the bottom, don't get me wrong. But it has to, that flooding has to stop soon. You can't, all of a sudden that 6 points become two, three, four, where there's only a game in it, and the next head-to-head is huge. Where 6-7 weeks ago, we were talking about Galway ending up in Europe. So when the momentum goes for you, as a positive, that's great. But when it goes against you as a negative, I would be concerned for them. I also think they'd be okay, but I would be concerned. There's a little bit of, we need to stop this rot and stop it quickly.
I would actually be more concerned about Waterford. Galway are only a point behind them. Galway or Waterford have shipped 14, minus 14. Galway are only minus 3. I think Galway have enough up front. Their defence is strong enough. I don't see them being in any problem at all. I actually think they'll finish above Waterford come the end of the season. Sligo, I agree with Vinny, have signed League of Ireland experience, talented players that have to prove themselves in a right age bracket. So it'll be an interesting fight between Sligo, Galway and Waterford.
Yeah, well, they will be playing Waterford next, Galway United at Eamon Deasy Park on Friday week. Like Waterford coming back from that drubbing up at Derry City, a 2-0 victory in the Munster Derby, but you can't really read too much into a win over Cork City these days, can you?
No, you can't, unfortunately. I mean, it's a bit like, I think I said it last week, it's probably the best fixture Shells could have had pre-Linfield, and it's the best fixture, unfortunately, for Cork people that Waterford could have had after being beaten, 7-2 up in the Brandywell. So just been too easy. It's too easy for them teams to pick points against them. So, but Gareth Roy, Waterford, they'll have one eye on Sligo's results over the next couple of weeks, and that's a big game, Waterford and Galway. We just need a little buffer where it becomes sort of back to that 9, 10, 12 points to Sligo, and then you're okay. Like, it would take an almighty run from Sligo. It's very difficult to win 3 or 4 games in a row in League of Ireland. So, but Waterford, again, you look at the front, sort of what they have got in front of going forward. They're quite strong in midfield. I think that'd be okay as well. But both of them need a couple of wins over the next 2 weeks just to keep that gap.
There's something about that Waterford defence I'm just not fully confident about, really.
Yeah, before Gareth answers that, it has to be injuries, though. Like, Boyle has played there. Boyle has been injured. Leahy's been in, he's been out. Horton has played in the back three. They've had a change of managers. They haven't had a settled back four, and if they don't have a settled back four, you're struggling. Yeah, and that's been the problem.
They're massive. And I said last week when they were slaughtered by Derry, I said, don't look on there too much. Don't get me wrong, Waterford weren't flying in the game. They were completely off it. But then they went and beat Cork. But again, if you look into the 2-0 win, it wasn't convincing. Cork basically gave up 2 or 3 goals or 2 or 3 very good chances. Had Cork have played the game a wee bit smarter and been defensively solid, would Waterford have broken them down? I said it in the Brandy well. Waterford did not look like scoring until Podge Ammon got the ball or got onto the end of someone. He is lethal. He is so important. God forbid, if anything were to happen him between now and the end of the season, Waterford would be in deep, deep trouble. I still think Waterford are in trouble. I think they got away with it because it was Cork and they were given a couple of goals. I think against, put it this way, this weekend, if I'm tipping anything up, I'm tipping up a Galway one. Or sorry, yeah. 2 weeks' time.
It's going to be interesting, that one. And then we talked about Cork City being ideal opponents. That's where Sligo Rovers will be going on that same night. Sligo Rovers head down to Turner's Cross. And I suppose if John Russell happened to be listening or watching, Vinny, he might get a couple of tips from yourself here, because you've been having a look at Cork City and the way that they're playing. And you've got a couple of issues. So we're going to actually have a look at a couple of clips here of Cork City's recent performances and stuff that you've been looking at, Vinny, that you're really not happy about from a Cork City perspective. So we might get a look at that video just now.
Yeah, I touched on this a little bit last week in terms of the staff there have been involved in a lot of it, sort of academy football. And you've got to understand you're playing League of Ireland. So you go for that goal against Shelbourne where your centre half takes an extra touch on the ball and Harry Wood is like a rash all over him, and you're 1-0 down against Shelbourne after a minute and 20 seconds away in Dublin when you're scrapping for your life. And I'm not saying you need to knock the ball long constantly or turn into something you're not, but there's a naivety about how they're playing, and some of that is unfortunately off the training ground, because when you go to the clips from Waterford last week and you look at straight line passes and people being under pressure. And creating a bit of pressure for Waterford, and they build from that, get chances from corners. And it's young players away from home in the Munster derby really struggling under pressure. And why I touched on sort of some of this comes on the training ground, when you think of the goal kicks and you split your centre half to the width of the box, right? And you get your number 6 Sean Murray coming to show for feet with no pass on away in the Munster derby. And maybe Sean can do a little bit better, don't get me wrong. But when you're robbed like that, yes, it's a brilliant finish away from home after 20 minutes in your last 2 games. You've lost an early goal to Chelsea, you've lost an early goal to Waterford. You're trying to play the beautiful academy football way. You've got to play a little bit of League of Ireland way and learn the hard way. And unfortunately, not too late for them to change some of this stuff. But it's getting very close to it. And you've got to be a bit ugly sometimes in League of Ireland. That's just me speaking as someone who's coached, I've played, I've just about survived the playoffs. I've been involved with it. It's hard. But sometimes you've got to play the ugly way, Stephen. And those 2 clips I just showed are just the last 2 weeks of where you're making it easy for the opposition.
Yeah, and like, you'd even think Greg Bulger would be the man there that should be in Murray's position, taking that ball and shielding it from there. Like, Murray is a really, I think he's a very talented footballer, but he's just not a big physical, I don't mean big, but like, he doesn't seem to be the player that has that physique that can hold off a challenger in that kind of situation.
Well, Gareth has seen the clip as well, so I'll let him come in on it. But sometimes, and it's not to give Sean an out, because I obviously work with Sean and brought to this country, outstanding footballer, played 50 odd times in the championship for Waterford. Injuries have really curtailed his career. But when Sean shows for the ball, that doesn't mean you give it to him. Everything was known around him. He can receive on the back foot. What a centre half should do then is clip over him. And then the next time the player doesn't follow Sean in because the ball's been clipped over him, then you get on the back foot and then you go and play. So that's the experience you need to learn to play at this level. Players need to learn that. So do the coaching staff.
And like, so what do Jerry Nash and David Moyler do from here, Gareth, do you think? Because, you know, they're running out of time here and like the gap just keeps getting bigger and bigger between themselves and Sligo Rovers at the bottom. Like they're now, 8 points, between themselves and Sligo Rovers. And it just seems like confidence has rocked. And then at the end of that game at the RSC, there was those scenes where the supporters were all giving abuse to the players. One supporter got on the pitch and remonstrated with the players face to face. Like, what can they do to try and turn this around?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Thank God I don't have any badges or went the coaching line, so we go with Vinny. But just from a player's point of view, that Sean Murray clip, there's no options for him. So usually you have your fullback coming in, just to knock it back to him, and then he plays it to the 10 or the winger. There's no option. Sean Murray literally has to, at a good pace, get the ball, get it under control, beat his man in a one-on-one situation, and turn and play it forward. So there was no options for him. So, I mean, as good a player as he is, it would have been impossible to get out of that. And that's what would worry me more than anything, and the distance between the two centre-halves. But again, the supporters coming on then, the RDS, that's just pure frustration. I mean, I talked about it last week, about the four legs of the stool. You've got the club, the manager, the players and the fans. The relationship between the fans and the club isn't good. So I think that has a lot of got to do with the player, the fans going on the pitch. The players are doing their best. The new management team, Jerry Nash and David Myler, they're only in the job. You got to give them time. I can't imagine any good Cork fan will be having a go at them or the players. The players are doing their best as well. There's just too much. There's not enough of a connection between the fans and the players. Too many loan signings. I kind of equate this to what was happening at Dundalk when Stephen O'Donnell, whenever it started to all unravel. It really tells you a lot about the management team. Stevie O'Donnell did well to finish third. This Jerry Nash and David Myler just need to concentrate on the players, the relationship between them and the players. But just quickly, you asked me what they should do next. When Derry played against Cork a couple of times, they hit Rory Keaton from all of their goal kicks, deep midfield, and even their throw-ins. He was the pivot. They didn't take any chances trying to play out from the back. And if you look at the results under Tim Clancy, they only ever lost by the odd goal. They were never beaten 4-1, 3-0. So they have to try and implement some of that solid defending and decision-making with the types of creative patterns of play that Jerry Nash and David Myler are trying to bring to the club.
Yeah, and I'm not being critical of the two of them, Stephen. They're not in the league a long time.
Yeah, lucky enough, 100%. I actually think Gareth makes a good point just about the supporters. And I know it's hard to be patient. We saw with Bohemians that there wasn't a lot of patience being shown for Alan Reynolds when he started winning games. But I'm sorry to cut across, you know, I just think as well, supporters need to have that little bit of patience, even just for a couple of games.
Yeah. And you have to allow them to try things. The problem is, it's almost relegated. It feels that way. So, The reason why I brought up them clips, I just think it's a great example to show people to say, you have to be, easiest thing to do in football is go in and coach a team. Now, forget badges for a second. Coach a team to be hard to be beat. Okay? I'm going up to Shelbourne conceding after a minute and 20 odd seconds, but your centre half takes one touch, second touch, and tries to flick one the outside of his boot. It's not how you do that. Okay? You do that in a training session, blow the whistle, stop it. And you let him know you don't do that again. Okay? So that's the easiest thing to coach. Second of all, splitting the centre halves away in the Dublin Derby, you haven't got enough control yet to do that. Okay? So I'm lucky. This is a cheap seat I'm sitting on. I'm not coaching at the moment. My time is done, all of that stuff. Right? So my advice is probably wasted. But my point is, I'm lucky enough to have, as I said, 25 years experience between playing, coaching and management. You've got to earn the right to play first. That doesn't change whatever the league is. They didn't earn the right to play in the last 2 weeks. So the coaches have taken some responsibility for that. That's why it looks like that goal kick is a phase of play, something you'd work on. Modern day coaching. Got to be careful at this level. This is big boy football. And penetration passes, get the ball forward. And then once you earn the right for Waterford to go, These fellas that keep picking the ball up each other, keep picking up each other, then they drop off, and you play through your Sean Murray's.
Yeah.
I've learned that and quickly, because all the other stuff is important. Gareth touched on, you touched on supporters. I've said it for so long. This is the second city in our country. It's so important. We have Cork City back to the table, fighting for European spots at very, very minimum. I believe there's a huge club and potential to be a huge club. They can learn so much from what other clubs are doing and doing so well, right? But they're doing, they need to have a right cut and galvanise the whole group and come from nowhere and try a Lazarus style sort of fight back. But doing what you're doing, that's not going to work for the next few weeks. Things are too cute now. You go and play short passes around your back, everyone's going to press the life out because they're all watching the same videos as the boys seen.
Because I'm interested, Stephen, when it came up in the podcast about 4 weeks ago and me and Vinny had a quick conversation about it as well. I'm interested, when you're a coach and these are your beliefs and this is the way that you've been taught through the badges and stuff like that, moving away from that for a game or two games or a period of time just to get yourself up the table or get a few results on the board. Coaches don't seem to do that anymore. It's like, this is the way we play, this is the way I play, and I'm going to keep doing it, and I'm going to die on my sword. Like, I ask Vinny all the time, like, surely there has to be a wee bit of, hold on a minute here, let's try and get some sort of, even a good feel of not conceding and keeping a clean sheet for 2 weeks.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so I'll give you one example, Steve-O, sorry.
Yeah.
And it's not Laurent Declare, but I think it's, and again, I apologise if we go back to Dundalk, but I know a minus one game with the last time I coached with Dundalk, or the minus one day, we'd work on goal kicks. It's modern football, because goal kicks are restarts, the huge part of the game. But their players wouldn't have had one or two. They would have five, six, seven, eight phases of play, and all rehearsed the day before. But it seems like now that there's a little bit of coaching of, you know, especially now that they changed the rule two on the box, you have to roll to the centre half beside you. Have to do this. You've got to give players six, seven options, and one of them has to be, depends on your striker, obviously, has to be a forward pass, a clip over the press. And when you clip over the press, I keep saying, clip over the press, because eventually then the opposition have to react to it. They drop 5 yards deeper, then you go and play, and it's about earning the right. So there's ways of doing this on the coaching ground, and you've got to do it quickly down the court, because I think all the noise off the pitch, all of that stuff, of course it's there and why it's there, they'll get louder if they just fail miserably over the next number of weeks. They can be definitely more competitive, and I think they need to learn from that and be really competitive again. And if you lose, dying on your sword, as Gareth said, you're throwing your bodies on the line, we'll all accept that. Cork supporters will accept that. They'll end their criticism back towards the board if that's the way it is. Don't be losing cheap goals. Just don't get people into the ground.
Okay, well, listen, Sligo Rovers will be going to Turner's Cross on Friday week. Just quickly, Gareth, on Sligo Rovers before we move on. Lombotto and Wawero, the two centre-forwards at the showgrounds. Like, they've both done really well in First Division football. They've done okay since coming up into the top flight. Can they be coached? Because they're still youngish, you know, they're still kind of yet to come to their peak years. Can they be coached to be better goal scorers, do you think? Can they start becoming a little bit more regular for John Russell?
Yeah, they can. And the best thing for a striker is getting games, because when you're a second string striker, when they came to the club, like, to me, Wawuru would be the number nine. He would be the guy that's going to get them goals. I like him. I think he's got a lot of talent and he can score goals. But the good thing for both of them are they're going to get game time in the Premier Division, and they're going to get players playing behind them that's going to create chances for them. And that's all you can ask as a striker. When you're playing up front the likes of Cork, the way they're playing, the ball is not getting up to you. You're not getting enough chances. You're not getting in behind enough. You're not getting up the pitch quick enough. But these guys will. Just thinking about Hikiki, we've got Elding, you've got Fitzgerald, who actually played left back against Derry. Like, they're very, very, McManus now coming into that midfield. There's a lot of talent in behind them, which will create chances for them. So I have no doubt that the two players will score goals. Lombardo is a wee bit raw, he's like a rough diamond. He, as you say, needs a wee bit more coaching, needs to play more game time, whether that be in the reserves or whatever, or cup games that he'll get an opportunity. But Wawera will score goals. And now that he knows he's number nine and he's the first choice, then he'll go and he'll get confidence off that.
Okay, well, listen, lads, we are running out of time, so we'll have to discuss the title eliminator next week, the Bows versus Derry City game up at the Roy McBride Brandywell Stadium.
We should just skip over Garrett, just real quickly. Garrett, we skip over defensive mistake from Derry last week.
Plenty of time to look back on that one next week. We are just a little bit tighter on time this week. Look, quick mention of the FAI Cup, lads. Second round, all the Premier Division teams coming into it. Some really eye-catching ties there. Wexford heading up to Tallaght Stadium to play Shamrock Rovers. A lot of former Shamrock Rovers and Bohemians players in that Wexford team. You've got Sligo Rovers going away to Dundalk, Finharps, UCD, and you've got a Northside Dublin derby there. Colester, Donnycarney against Bohemians. Any good stories on the old non-league teams playing against the FAI Cup teams? Do you ever get any humiliations or embarrassments back in your playing days, lads?
Not really, no. I remember being 1-0 down to Tallaght Rovers in 2003, I think it was, and we went on and won the Cup that year, but we were 1-0 down after 2 minutes. And
that's what you call a humble brag, Vinny.
Sorry. Apologies. The point I made is, League of Ireland teams hate them games. Absolutely hate them. Everyone involved would hate them. They don't enjoy them. As a player, I'm talking about, you just hate them. Mm. You're on a hiding to nothing. So really, really difficult. I just don't like them. I was chatting this morning too. I'm lucky enough to be on holidays at the moment with the captain of the team that won that 2003 Cup final. And we were just discussing this morning, and he said to me, I hate them games. And we were talking about that Tolkien game. It's just awful. Like, you know, there's nothing about it that you enjoy. They're really hard to take. So for me, I hate them.
Garrett, I'd say you hate them even more as a winger.
You know what? I did hate them, and no player likes it because you can't win. If you won 3-0, you're expected to win 3-0. If you won 1-0, it's a joke. You should have been beating them more. But the cup finals defeats, we were beat in 2002. Now, luckily, we went and won the FAI Cup final that year. But in 2002 against Limerick FC, now they were in the first division, but we were beating penalties. It was a replay down there. It was the worst game of football I've ever played, and most of the Derry City players have ever played. So when we got a draw, we were all buzzing. We'll battle them up at the Brandywell. And mentality got the best of us. We were beating penalties.
Oh, lads. Well, listen, if anybody has any footage of that particular game down at Market's Field, maybe just bury it. Just dig a deep, deep hole in under the ground and just bury it. We never want to see it ever again. Lads, it's been absolutely brilliant.
Stevie, just a quick one for you. Stevie Gavin is the manager of Castlebar Celtic. I don't know, it'd be a few years back now, but one of Stephen Kenny's four signings for Longford Town was actually Stevie Gavin. And an amazing winger, just came back from the UK at the time, but Stevie was a huge part of the very early success Dundalk had, or Longford had, in terms of getting promoted, and that really exciting goal scoring right winger. That's one that, watch out for a shock on that one. Interesting to see how Stevie gets on.
Great stuff. Well, listen, best of luck to all the non-league teams coming into the competition. It's going to be great entertainment this Friday. Lads, have a great week, and we'll chat to you next week.
The League of Ireland Pod.
On Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the refreshingly alcohol-free Rockshore 00. Get the facts. Be drink aware. Visit drinkaware.ie.